In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
In order to believe we've had a fair and free election, you have to believe the unbelievable. That's it. That's the entire election in a nutshell. You have to believe the unbelievable. Or if you prefer the more scientific term, the improbable. You have to believe that the computer glitches all just happened to go to one candidate. You have to believe the computers in multiple states all just happened to stop counting at the same time, and when they came back online, the addition of hundreds of thousands of votes for one candidate and only one candidate is somehow legitimate. You have to believe that mysterious trucks arriving with boxes and boxes of ballots is completely above board, not to mention that they all went for Biden. You have to believe that Pennsylvania, Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada all just happened to change election regulations in ways to favor Democrat candidates, and which coincidentally opened the door for more potential voter fraud. And those eerily similar changes in multiple states was mere coincidence. It's odd how those states with Democratic governors worked with court systems to institute universal absentee vote by mail, despite it directly contradicting existing laws in those states. You'd also have to believe that this year, like things like signature verification of ballots and multiple other forms of validation, were all eliminated, but somehow doing so couldn't possibly lead to voter fraud. Like I said, to believe this election, you have to believe the improbable. Here's a simple case of applied statistics and logic. In 2016, Georgia had a rejection rate of absentee ballots of 6.4%. In 2020, they had a tenfold increase of absentee mail-in ballots. So logically, you would think that they'd have a similar rejection rate of around 6%, give or take. There'd be a parallel there. Except the opposite happened. Their rejection rate went from 6.4 to 0.2%. That is a 98% decline. A 10 times increase in ballots, but a 98% decrease in rejections. On today's show, we'll be looking at the improbable the media says you have to believe. You must believe. We'll look at the improbable from two angles. In the second half, we'll talk with Kimberly Herman, looking at things from the legal angle, cases, evidence, and what it will take to convince courts the improbable didn't happen, including a surprising new case they're working on. But first, I'd like to welcome Chuck Weiss to the show to look at the improbability of the numbers. You know him as a frequent guest here to talk about all things global warming. Chuck is a former meteorologist and an expert at pulling apart the improbable. Chuck, I don't think we'll get into things like linear regression, but let's start with low-hanging statistical instances that most people can grasp, because it's not just statistics, it's simple logic. Easy to understand stuff like votes appearing en masse in the middle of the night. For instance, you know, most people get it when you've got a coin flip. What are the chances of getting head? That's 1 in 2, you know, 50%. Throw a die, and the chance of getting an outcome is 1 in 6. Deck of cards, 1 in 52, and so on. So let's say that you've got a stadium in Michigan with 149,722 people in the stands, and there's one Jumbotron between them. And yet there are five playoff games going on. And so they ask people to vote for which one game they want to watch. What is the chance that all 149,722 people vote to watch the same playoff game, you think?
Well, it's as close to zero as you could possibly get. I mean, yeah. It's a statistical impossibility by all counts. So, yeah, it's impossible. That's what you would be told by a statistician that looks at these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And yet, that's what we saw in the middle of the night. Well, actually, it was 6:31 in the morning there in Michigan. 149,722 votes just magically appeared, and all of them for Biden. That just blows one's mind, doesn't it?
Yes, the voting stopped at about, I think it was 1 or 1:30 in the morning Eastern time. And there were no updates, nothing happened. And then what is it, about 4:35 in the morning, suddenly when the next count of votes come in, there's this sudden surge of all Biden votes that basically caught him up and put him over, slightly over the Trump totals in these critical swing states. And you can watch this, or you can plot it on a time graph where time would be along the x-axis and the votes on the y-axis. And that's where you suddenly see this huge surge, which is impossible. It's just goes back to the same probability you just pointed out. What's the chance of all those votes being for Biden and practically none for Trump, and they come in a flurry of a surge that suddenly closes this gap, which was a couple of 100,000 votes in some of these swing states? It just doesn't happen. No. There's something seriously wrong. These votes were obviously injected.
Right. And the thing is, you know, with statistics, statistically, anything is possible. You know, people win the lottery, even though it's like one in a billion chance. So these things do happen. And yet we saw that happen not just in Michigan, but in the other swing states as well. Pennsylvania was another one where there was this massive drop. Georgia as well. It was like, I think, 50 or 60,000 votes that suddenly magically appeared. But as you look at that, and they have these magical drops, do you think maybe they panicked, the people doing this, because they were so sloppy to just drop that in that just defies not only statistics but logic itself? Do you think they just panicked and that's why they dropped this in the way that they did, rather than take some time and slip it in?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. In fact, I've been like a vacuum cleaner, sucking up information from practically all the sources I can get it from. And Sidney Powell made this important observation, because she's one of the lead attorneys that's looking into her own investigation of the voter fraud that was going on. And when she's been digging into this with Attorney Lynn into voter fraud and what has been happening, her interesting observation was, in her opinion, what she's been able to dig up so far, they were planning to win this election by inserting what she claimed, and Dr. Schreiber is backing this up with his own statistical analysis. There are algorithms that were put in these Dominion voting machines, and an algorithm is a formula which subtracts votes from one party and gives to another. You can weight these based upon the number of votes coming in. There's a number of ways you can calculate what the coefficient should be to steal the votes. And they had done this ahead of time, in her opinion, to where they had it planned out, you know, based upon all the information they had gathered about who was likely to win the election by polls that they had conducted before. They roughly calculated the number of votes they would need to steal from Trump to put Biden in the lead and make it look natural, like he had won the election. And what happened was, against all odds of the pollsters, against everything that they learned about what they expected the outcome of the election to be, Trump was winning on election eve by a landslide in all of these swing states. He was way, way far ahead of the number of votes that the pollsters had figured he would end up getting by the end of the night. And so they went into panic mode when they saw that, because what they discovered was the algorithm that was put in place in the Dominion machines, which was switching votes, was not going to adequately cover the increasing gap that was occurring between Biden and Trump. And if they didn't do something to intervene, Trump would still win the election at the end of the night, even with these weighted algorithms or formulas they put into the Dominion machines. So that's when they panicked. And they started stuffing, they stopped the counting, and they started, you know, just rampantly stuffing fake ballots into the machines and interjecting counts to where they could catch up during the time when they had everything down and they weren't updating tallies, until when they got it all done, they knew they had enough votes and they ran it. And that's where you suddenly saw this huge spike in nothing but Biden votes to pass Trump. That's her analysis on what happens, and it makes 100% sense to me.
Yeah, it does, because it, like you say, if they're chugging along at a certain rate that they had predetermined based on, you know, the magical pollsters, it would make sense why they had to stop, and suddenly there was that massive surge in order to make up ground. And, you know, Trump has a great speech, which we'll put up on iSpyRadio.com as well. It's about 45 minutes. Really important that people listen to that. But he mentioned that about the pollsters. He didn't mention that about the algorithms that are set to trigger. But he did mention that the pollsters, and this is why you can certainly understand why the algorithm was so wrong, pollsters had Trump down by 17 points in Wisconsin. So yeah. if that's your basis for inserting votes and you're thinking that he's going to lose by 17 points, that would be a slow rollout. But it turns out if he's going to be winning by 5%, that's a 22% swing, and suddenly you have got to interject an awful lot of votes.
Exactly. And that's what Sidney Powell and her research has shown what happened. And then, of course, we have statisticians, and I've looked at all their studies, and they confirm this by looking at the actual data in some of these swing states. That's exactly what happened. The algorithms were triggered, but they were insufficient at the end of the night to make up for what needed to be made up for to cause this thing to go for Biden. So that's when they started taking the fraudulent ballots from all these other places, and that was their insurance policy to have them ready to go in case things with the voting machines didn't go the way they wanted, which is what actually happened.
Yep.
And so then that's when suddenly the surge happened. They brought in all the other votes.
And I think that absolutely logically explains that. All right, let's go and take a break. We'll have more with Chuck Weiss running through some of the numbers. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking to Chuck Weiss. He's a former meteorologist and current fearsome global warming critic. We'd like to have Chuck on because he's a clear and logical thinker, and he's got a good background in science and statistics. Chuck, we've been going through some of these numbers that just don't add up, both figuratively and literally. And that's actually something, too, that I found to be really interesting the night of the election, as you're seeing some of the votes come in. And you'd have instances where, in a normal situation, where you're adding numbers, these numbers keep going up. And yet, on the Trump side, mysteriously, you would have 2,500 votes just suddenly disappear. And that happened in multiple states. Normally, when you're adding things, subtraction doesn't usually figure that, and it only ever went for Trump. Isn't that just a little bit odd?
Well, it certainly is, and that's where Dr. Shabe Yatarai's work from MIT comes into play. He's an MIT mathematician and statistician, and he looked into this very thing. And what he did was he looked at several counties in the state of Michigan. That's where he was interested in focusing in on. And what they did to determine whether there might be some wrongdoing or some monkeying with the numbers is they took a look at Republican voters specifically. So they took the Republican voters that would vote straight ticket. In other words, that's what he used to determine how Republican a particular precinct would be. Because somebody who votes straight Republican ticket, in other words, for all the Republican candidates, is definitely considered to be a Republican precinct. So they compared the percentage of those to the percentage of just non-straight party voters, individual voters, and Democrats and others. And he took the total number of those, the percentage of those, and subtracted them from the straight party voting Republicans. And then he plotted all this up on a graph and found some very interesting things that emerged from this. If everything is above board and you do this sort of a computation, you should find that, you should find when you do the computation that that all of the results of it, by subtracting the difference between independents and Democrats versus straight party Republicans, should fall within plus or minus 10% of a mean figure, which he put a zero on his graph. And in fact, when you look at Wayne County, Michigan, where this algorithm that he found that was in these machines. It wasn't put in the machine in Wayne County because Wayne County, Michigan is around Detroit. It's heavily Democrat. And he plotted all the data up from there, and it showed a perfectly naturally occurring pattern from the left to the right-hand side of the graph. And it showed that Trump actually did better in Wayne County, slightly better than the straight party Republican vote by 5 to 10%. And that kind of continued all the way across the spectrum as you got increasingly Republican in the number of precincts in Wayne County that were Republican. So that's the natural way things should look. And then when he took the Republican districts, the ones outside of Wayne County that become increasingly Republican, and you subtract those differences, you find you get a perfectly sloping line that goes down. And as you get more Republican, the you would expect that the number of independents would as a percentage would stay pretty close to what the Republican vote is, plus or minus 10%. And in fact, it didn't. It goes straight down in a linear line. And by the time you reach these precincts that are 80% Republican, you're finding a 30% difference in independent and Republicans that don't vote straight ticket. And that what that indicates is you've got an algorithm that's transferring votes away from these independents who voted for Trump and switching them to Biden. And so this is what his algorithm showed, and you could actually compute the slope of that line. It's completely contradictory to where Wayne County's votes came in, and it shows that there's definitely a pattern of votes being stolen. And they did a pretty detailed analysis of all this, Mark, and when they finished their computations, he determined, when you add up all these votes and the discrepancies based upon what he plotted, he figures that 69,000 votes, if you add up all the counties in Michigan, by the algorithm alone that he uncovered, 69,000 votes were taken from President Trump and given to Biden. That's a swing of 138,000 votes.
Right.
Now, that's enough, I think, in Michigan, with all the other things they discovered, to where that should have gone to President Trump, and it didn't. And so that's what he turned over to, he tried to turn it over to authorities, and he had has had no luck in doing that. And that got his curiosity up even further because, you know, he's from Massachusetts, being from MIT. And he called the Secretary of State's office in Massachusetts, and he wanted to run the same sorts of studies in Massachusetts to see what he would come up with there. He called the Secretary of State's office and asked them, I'd like to get copies of the images on the voting machines of all the people that voted, you know, to be able to tally this stuff up. And to his surprise, the Secretary of State of Massachusetts told him, we don't save those records. We destroy them. You know, we don't keep them. And that's a direct violation of federal law. He went to court over that, and he actually won, but it doesn't change the fact that Massachusetts took those votes and made them unavailable to where he couldn't do the kind of checking there that he did right after the election in the state of Michigan. But his study was very clear. What it showed was, in the state of Michigan, there was definitely an algorithm that was, or an equation that was put in these machines that is weighted by the number of votes coming in and was transferring them from President Trump to Joe Biden, and enough to swing the election in that state.
Yeah.
When it was all said and done, that was fascinating. And when I watched the whole thing,
it was
very, very convincing. You know, to anybody who knows anything about statistics, you look at that and you just think to myself, my word, this is definitely something very fraudulent that happened and needs to be thoroughly examined.
Oh yeah.
And that's the number they came up with, a vote steal, based upon that one study alone. And that was in Michigan.
Yeah, and we will link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. It really is worthwhile. Even if you're not really grounded in statistics, you'll be able to understand that one, because what it clearly shows is that in these heavy Republican districts, which should have been voting more for Trump, because remember, you know, he's got like 95% approval within the Republicans, and yet they were voting at a rate of around 60 or 70% for Trump instead. So it makes no sense. All right, things are not adding up. We'll talk more with Chuck Weiss after this. And welcome back. We're wrapping things up with Chuck Weiss. He's a fierce global warming debunker, and he's a former meteorologist, and unlike many of his critics, among the global warming crowd, he has a degree in actual science, not marketing. And so, Chuck, speaking of global warming, we've seen these statistical models before, I think, in terms of global warming, where suddenly they will inject a bunch of warming in order to make it look like there's warming when there's really not. As you've gone through some of these voter examinations and the election results, have you seen similarities between what we see with global warming with what we're seeing now?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is what's got my radar going full speed in looking into things like this, because there's so much continuity and similarity to the global warming fraud that we see run with these failed models and the claims that are made by manipulated statistics on the actual climate records themselves. There's countless examples of that. And we've looked at it over and over again, and I've talked about it on your show. So when I saw these irregularities showing up in the election this year, that's what got me interested in looking at all aspects of this. And I'm absolutely convinced after doing so that President Trump won this election. Joe Biden is not the president-elect. He didn't win. And when I think this is all sorted out and said and done, that you will find, if you're going to be honest, that he is not going to be the president-elect.
And speaking of honesty, you know, if you wanted people to trust the numbers and you wanted people to trust the elections, it seems like the most logical thing that Joe Biden would be doing is encouraging people to go out and look at these numbers. Yes, let's look at these election results. We should make sure that we have fair and honest results. And yet, nary a whisper from him on that.
No, and it's worse than that, because what did they do? I mean, he's the guy that said during the debates that, yes, he will wait if there's any uncertainty in the election. Didn't he tell the American public he would definitely wait to make sure every vote's counted and it's all done, tabulated to everybody's satisfaction? He said that during the debates. And no sooner did he say that when we had the election and this fraudulent win for him surfaced. He assumed the presidency and said, hey, it's time to turn the temperature down. Let's come together. I'm the president. And he started getting the media and this silly, stupid, it says President-elect Joe Biden, the office of the president-elect. The media ran with this, and they're trying to shove it down everybody's throat before any of these issues are sorted out, that he's the president-elect. That's a complete lie. He's not the president-elect. The Electoral College hasn't even met yet. And we don't know what's going to happen when we reach that date because of all these uncertainties that are surfacing now. The whole thing is just a big fraud. It's just laughable to see this guy on television with that screen behind him that said office of the president-elect. This is just a farce.
Yeah, but that was way back in the primary, and he probably forgot that he said that.
Right. He could have. He's not doing very well upstairs, is he?
No, that's for sure. So in terms of looking at these, you know, the election results and when the numbers come in and from the various places that they come in from and whatnot, are there some statistical tools that people would use to examine these results and say things just aren't adding up?
Well, yes. In addition to the statistical analysis that we've already talked briefly about, there are people that actually dug into the raw data now. They've gone beyond just the statistical tests, which show that there was likely malfeasance and fraud going on in these elections. And we've had people dig into the records. And one of them that's very impressive, too, is Matt Brainerd from the Voter Integrity Project. And he looked into the early voting and the absentee ballots that were cast in the states of Georgia, Arizona, and Wisconsin. And what he found was, looking into the records, he got these from the Secretary of State's office and gathered all this information. He looked at votes that came in early and absentee ballots that came in early, and he got the records from the Secretary of State's offices in all these areas that showed who was eligible to vote, who had legally registered to vote, and then also got a hold of all the number of people who had complained that they were sent a mail-in ballot that they never requested. And then when they went to vote on the day of the election in person in these places, they were told they couldn't vote because they'd already voted. And they didn't vote. They were just simply sent a ballot. But then somebody cast the ballot without them knowing until they showed up for the poll place. Well, he took all that information and added everything up. And what he found was there were people that did this, that fraudulently voted in the name of other people who had been sent a ballot they didn't ask for. He also found the names of people, these same names, which surfaced in three different states. And I'm talking about Wisconsin, Georgia, and Arizona. The same names cast ballots in those states. There were dead people that voted that he found that should have been taken off the voter rolls. And then there were people that were simply ineligible to vote. They could have been illegals, whatever, but they were not eligible to vote by the declaration of the Secretary of State's office in these three states, yet they were allowed to vote anyway, and their vote was counted. So when you took all of that information and you added it up, what he found out was that the number of votes that Biden had won these states by, I'm talking about Wisconsin, Georgia, and Arizona, the margin of victory for Biden is erased just by throwing out all of these things which you know are fraudulent. Yeah. You know they are. There's no question about it. And he said that Biden's margin of victory evaporates in all three of those states. So let's just take a look at that. In Arizona, there are 11 electoral votes. In Wisconsin, there's 10. And in Georgia, there's 16. That's 37 electoral votes. Right now, Joe Biden claims he's got 306. But these are easy slam dunks in Arizona, Wisconsin, and Georgia. He didn't win them. So take away those 37 electoral votes, and Biden is now at 269. That's one short of what you need in the Electoral College to win the election. And that doesn't count the challenges forthcoming in Georgia and Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania and Michigan and possibly Minnesota and Nevada. So we've got a clear constitutional crisis on our hands here, because at least right now, until the other things are sorted out, because these 37 electoral votes need to be taken away from Joe Biden, yes. putting him at 269.
Yep. Yep.
And even if they go to Trump, he doesn't make 270. So neither one is a winner in the Electoral College until the other matters are settled. But what that, but we do know with this information that Matt has gathered on these three states, there's no way that Wisconsin, Georgia, or Arizona can claim Biden gets those electoral votes. He's proven that by just digging this up, which the Secretary of State's office and the people tabulating the votes refused to do. He's mm-hmm. already proven it to them.
Yeah.
And he's turned it over to the FBI and the Department of Justice. And so far, what are they doing? They're just sitting on this.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's the case of all of this, is that whether you're talking about judges or legislature or law enforcement, you have to have the will to do the right thing. And right now, a lot of people are just sitting on their hands. I think the next thing is we have to give them the will and the spine to do the right thing. Chuck, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Well, I'm quite glad to be on the show, Mark. I pray every day for our president. President Trump is the true president-elect, and let's just hope that the system works its way through this
yes.
and awards him the presidency for four more years, because
yes.
that's who really won the election.
Yes, absolutely. And welcome back. Talking to Kimberly Herman. She's the general counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation, an Atlanta-based constitutional public interest law firm and policy center. They are dedicated to advocating limited government, protecting American freedom, and defending individual liberties. Kim, it's great to talk to you again.
Great to be back, Mark.
So the amount of allegations of corruption is just simply staggering and mind-blowing. We've got tens of thousands of affidavits out there alleging misconduct, actual voter fraud, and election theft. You guys aren't directly involved in some of these cases, but you are starting to get involved in open records requests, as I understand it. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's correct. So one aspect of this, the main aspect so far has been focused on what's actually happened on election day. Mm-hmm. Right. And what's been happening with the counts afterwards and the recounts and things like that. But our question really is what happened beforehand? When you have this many discrepancies in this many states, and like you said, the tens of thousands of affidavits that are coming forward, this could not have just happened on a whim. And so what we're really interested in is how was this planned? Right. Mm-hmm. Who was talking to who? Were the states talking to each other? Does this involve the Secretary of State? Was this, was this done precinct to precinct? How was this coordinated and how high up does this really go? Mm-hmm. And so the only way we're going to find that out is by getting the emails, by getting the documents, by getting the texts, the communications. And, we're getting ready for a fight to get those documents for the American public.
Well, I think that's awesome, and I think that's certainly something that needs to happen because it does look like this was a coordinated attempt. So what's to say? I mean, we've already seen where people at the highest levels of the Department of Justice, lawyers who ought to know better, destroyed their phones. They wiped their phones on the Mueller team. What's to stop them from immediately burning these emails and phone calls and everything else?
I mean, nothing other than the law, right? And so it's a matter of us sending these open records requests, us trying to get these records. And when they come up dry, right, if they come up and say that nothing exists, well, that's a little questionable. And I think that we all recognize that. And so then it's a matter of just digging deeper, like we've been doing for the last 4 years, for the last 8 years. I mean, it never really stops. And so we're like I said, we're digging in for a fight here. They could destroy records. It's illegal to do that. And so if they do so, we need to find out and we need to do everything we can to get them held accountable.
If they're willing to commit voter fraud, election theft, it wouldn't surprise me if they're willing to destroy records to hide the evidence of that voter theft. Okay, so your record request, I would assume, covers public channels, like emails from one state agency to another. What about personal records? Because what if they all just happened to be logging into a certain website that had the instructions and coordination and everything? I mean, we use Google Groups. I mean, what's to say that they were, logging in on that under their own personal emails? Are you able to snatch those?
Yeah, so if government actors are conducting government activity through their private emails, we've litigated cases like that before where the courts will require them to go search those, you know, whether it's an email account or a group me is a huge one, like you mentioned, or message boards, things like that. You know, we've been litigating those types of cases for since I've been at SLF for over a decade, you know, where we have to fight and show that that's where they were communicating and then try to get the information. But some actors are very sophisticated. My gut tells me here that there are a lot of people involved at many different levels. And so I believe we're going to uncover quite a bit of information out there.
Well, it certainly has that feel that there were a lot of people coordinating efforts. We certainly saw that with the computers where they all just happened to go off at the same time in multiple states. I mean, that doesn't seem to be a mere coincidence. Talking about some of the other cases there, a big bit of news a couple of weeks back was an apparent split between Giuliani and Sidney Powell. I don't know if it necessarily was a split. It kind of had that feel. But does it actually help you think to be attacking this from multiple angles? Because it's not just Giuliani and Sidney Powell. There are multiple cases out there. What are your thoughts, multiple angles versus a coordinated effort?
Oh, I absolutely think we have to attack it from multiple angles, right? I mean, you've got observation lawsuits, deadline extension issues, signature matching, lack of address, out-of-state voters, dead voters. I mean, the list goes on. I literally write, honestly, in front of me, have a list of about, you know, 25 different categories of cases. And wow. So we need attorneys throughout the country. We need these private attorneys who are willing to stand up for what is right and stand up for election integrity and bring these different lawsuits. And so, you know, the media, the mainstream media, let me rephrase, is going to spin things as splits and factions and this, that, and the other. Well, you know, they're going to do that. We can't stop them. But what I really see is a proper strategy to fight for election integrity here.
Right. So with all of these cases going on, is there actual history and legal precedent of overturning fraudulent elections?
Not necessarily overturning fraudulent elections, but there is precedent for criminal convictions with respect to voter fraud. The Heritage Foundation tracks this very well. Hans von Spakovsky out there has done a phenomenal job. I believe that there's about 1,100 or more criminal convictions that they have logged with voter fraud, something like 50 civil penalties, over 1,300 proven instances of voter fraud in the past, judicial findings, things like that. They've got a website that tracks all of that. And so, yeah, you know, there are people who have been penalized criminally and civilly for voter fraud.
Okay, let's go and take a break there. We'll have more with Kimberly Herman of Southeastern Legal Foundation coming up. We'll be talking about some of the evidence that's out there. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking today to Kimberly Herman. She's the General Counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation. That's a nonprofit dedicated to advocating limited government, protecting American freedom, and defending individual liberties. Their website is slfliberty.org, if you'd like to go visit them. And so, Kim, I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the evidence that's out there. So you've got tens of thousands of affidavits of people saying they witnessed voter fraud, they witnessed things like boxes and boxes of ballots suddenly appearing in Michigan and Detroit, and they just all just happen to be for Biden. So it's just one thing after another. And as you mentioned, you had 25 different categories of voter fraud happening here. So, but let's talk about the affidavits themselves. In terms of legal proceedings, what exactly is an affidavit, and how much legal weight does it really have in these kinds of cases?
Yeah, so an affidavit is something that somebody is going to sign, and they tell their story, basically. And so think about it, if somebody is an election observer and they're there and they're being forced out of the room, they're being told they have to leave, somebody's standing in front of them, you know, they tell the story of what happened. And so instead of sitting up in a chair in a courtroom and giving testimony, it's written testimony for the easiest way to explain it. And so it's going to hold that same kind of weight. It's really important that attorneys have been going out there and getting these in real time, because as time goes on, people can be alleged to forget things. And so the fact that they have all of these already and they got them is going to be good for their lawsuits. But that's really where the meat of the story is. That's where the meat of the allegations is going to be found. So if you really want to know what's happening out there, that's where you go. You read those.
Well, and these sound like election process crimes in a lot of cases where you've got Republicans that were literally blocked from any meaningful observation. We talked with an attorney in Pennsylvania in the week after the election, and he was among them that were blocked from observing. He said that's the whole point of having poll watchers, is so they can be there as the ballots are opened and examined, because that's when you decide whether or not it's a valid vote. But they were pushed out of the room. They had to watch from a little camera from like 20 feet away, so you couldn't see anything. So in terms of those votes that were then pushed through there, where they were not allowed to witness those, what can be done about that? Because once they're in the big giant bin of the state, they don't have any identifiers, so you can't say that was a Biden vote or a Trump vote. What do you do in those cases?
Mm-hmm. That's the $20,000 question right now. Right. And so, you know, there's a lot of talk out there about how was this fraud committed? And we're really talking about kind of old school Tammany Hall ways, mm-hmm. where you have these paper ballots. You look at these lawsuits. I mean, there's allegations that ballots were filled out for weeks before the election. There's allegations that ballots were changed, that ballots were created. I mean, you see these numbers. There's no way that you're going to scan them in and they're going to all be in consecutive order and all for Biden. I mean, it just shocks the conscience and stuff. And so, but how do you track it? That's the $20,000 question. And so preserving the evidence is key. We've had some cases where the judges have ordered evidence to be preserved. We've had some cases where they refused to do that. You know, here I'm located in Atlanta, Georgia, and we have some counties that didn't even back up the voting machines properly. It is, like I said, all these different categories, it's all over the map, and uncovering it and peeling back every piece of the onion in time is just really what we're all praying can be done.
You know, there's a certain amount of sanctity when it comes to our elections, and that I think mm-hmm. we all look at these and we've always thought, well, it's secure. We've got these different mechanisms in place to prevent fraud. And yet, as you're describing it, it was just this massive voter fraud that took place. I guess it shouldn't surprise us, because we know that they were willing to do this at the Department of Justice and the FBI and the CIA, using our own federal agencies to try to overturn 2016. And yet this is really strikes at the heart of America, our elections. And if we can't trust these elections, how on earth do we move forward? And yet it looks like this widespread net of anything goes in terms of being able to commit voter fraud, and they tried it. So what are your thoughts looking forward here? I mean, will judges start saying, you know, we just can't have this kind of voter fraud be allowed to stand?
I mean, I sure hope so. I mean, I'm very hopeful with the makeup of our Supreme Court now, and that as cases kind of work their way up. But the problem is that they have to work their way up. I say, you know, problem, because it right now time is just absolutely of the essence. I have the same concerns that you have. I think it's just a time where we have to have faith in our Constitution, and have faith that, you know, the reason why we have separation of powers, and we have federalism, and we have, you know, states versus federal governments, not versus, but states and federal government, is for those types of checks and balances. And that at the end of the day, when it plays out, just having faith in our constitutional structure. But a lot's going to have to be done between now and 2024 to regain the confidence of the American voter. Because you look at these studies that are out and these polls, you know, and the vast majority, at least of Republicans, don't believe that Biden actually won because of all these fraudulent allegations.
Yeah. Well, it's not just statistics, but sheer logic would seem to say that that it didn't turn out the way that they're alleging it is. But speaking of statistical analysis, we had talked with Chuck Weiss in our first half of the show, where you've got all of these votes coming in, all of them for Biden, and other math and science-oriented analysis of the election that casts really an awful lot of doubt on the validity of the votes and the result itself. So does that kind of mathematical evidence have more weight than an affidavit of someone who says they witnessed fraud?
It's going to depend on what judge you're in front of, obviously. But I think that they should have equal weight to a degree, right? It's all evidence of fraud, right? And so you're showing, with the statistical evidence, you're showing it on a large scale. And I think that it's very convincing, because there's just, like you said, no statistical way that these votes could have come in the way that they did. But then having the human stories of the people that actually saw this happening, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it, the videos of here at State Farm Arena in Atlanta came out last night. I mean, you can see it with your own eyes that it happened.
Yeah.
There's no denying that.
Yeah, they work hand in hand. Just astounding. It really is. All right, Dad, let's go and take a break there. We'll wrap things up with Kimberly Herman. And welcome back in our final segment now with Kimberly Herman. She's General Counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation. They are a nonprofit dedicated to advocating limited government, protecting American freedoms, and defending individual liberties, and that makes them a hero in our book. Their website is slfliberty.org. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. And so, Kim, in this final segment, you were talking that you've got 25 different categories of fraud that are out there. You look at this all across the nation, where you've got Wisconsin and Michigan and some of these other ones. They instituted, they went around their legislative laws and essentially instituted universal mail-in balloting. Even the European Union doesn't allow mail-in balloting. And in fact, it's very hard even to get an absentee ballot. You have to physically be out of the country and prove that you're physically out of the country in order to be able to vote absentee. But there is no such thing as absentee if you're still in country. I think even places like India and whatnot that have been running elections successfully must be looking at us and laughing. I think even third world countries must be looking at us and laughing.
They are. My husband is at a company that works in heavily in Europe, and whenever he talks to people over there, their first question is, "What is going on in the United States right now?" Because this is not, we're supposed to be the country that can get it right. We're supposed to be the country that sets the example for the world, and right now we're not. But I also don't think it's mistakes, right? As we were talking about before, I think it's a very coordinated effort by some of those that are at the highest levels of power in our government and in the business world to undermine the election integrity in our country, which then is an effort to undermine our Constitution. And so those of us who believe in the Constitution need to keep believing in it and keep fighting for our system of government.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we saw a few dozen bad actors in federal agencies trying to overturn the last election through their own coup there. But it wouldn't surprise me if we have several thousand people that became dedicated and said, we're just going to get Trump out no matter what. So the mainstream media likes to say that there's just no evidence out there. You mentioned in the last segment about the suitcases being pulled out there in Georgia. I mean, this is video evidence. What evidence do you think would convince the media that something did indeed happen and that Democrats are trying to steal the election?
The mainstream media? I don't think anything. I mean, I think that they know what actually happened, but they're sure not going to carry those stories. Just like they haven't carried stories on the amazing policies that the Trump administration has been able to, implement over the last 4 years. You know, you can say what you want about his tact and his approach, but his policies have just been absolutely phenomenal for this country, both economically, socially and legally. And they're not going to cover any of that, no matter what we do. Because like you said, they've been working for over 4 years. Since the day he came down that escalator, they've been working to keep him out of the White House.
I think that's a good point. In fact, there was a poll recently by the Media Research Center that found that 17% of people, of Biden voters, would not have voted for Biden had they known the major news stories that the media was ignoring. So in the time that we have left, though, aside from convincing the media, what evidence would convince courts, especially the Supreme Court, to say this is just completely wrong and something needs to be done, whether it's throw it out or whatever other remedies are out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the video evidence, any documentary evidence, right? And so, you talked about the statistics, we talked about the affidavits. To me, it's the video evidence, the hard evidence that shows that, you know, here, ballots were taken out of suitcases, and when they were run, every single one of them was for Biden. And, you know, being able to track that and get in there and investigate it, that's the challenging part. But the, you know, the hard documentary evidence, I think, is going to be extremely important here. Mm-hmm. And like you said, the numbers we're talking about do put the election into question. And so, the bigger question I have is what's going to be done then, right? And we don't know, because this is truly unprecedented. We've heard that term so much in 2020. This is unprecedented.
Yeah. Well, that was going to be my next question is, okay, so what are the legal remedies? And if mm-hmm. they accept the fact that there's fraud, what do they do then? I know that the Supreme Court may not want to throw out an election, but at the same time, you know, the moral and legal standard can't become, well, as long as you cheated overwhelmingly, then it's okay.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I don't know. I've done a good deal of research into the past. You know, there's numerous times when the House has had to get involved, four times when we've had issues with, the Electoral College and ties and things like that. But I don't know, honestly, but the correct thing to do would be to not allow the election and the results to move forward. If they were fraudulently, if fraud actually happened, which we all know it did, the results have to be thrown out in some way, shape, or form. But I wish I had an answer.
Well, what's your best guess what's your best guess on who would throw that out? Would it be the Supreme Court, or is it more likely the legislators?
It's going to make its way up through the courts. But you look at the number of states, 32 of the states, the electors are bound by the vote, by the popular vote. Here in Georgia, they're not. So I'm really curious to see what's going to end up happening here, because we have these 16 electoral votes, and there's nothing in the law that requires them to actually vote a certain way. I'm not saying that they're not going to. I don't think anyone has come out and said that. But I'm really curious to watch what's going to happen in these other states, because, they believe that fraud happened, are they really bound to cast their vote for Biden?
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Going to be fascinating to watch. 2020, the year of the unprecedented for sure. Kimberly Herman, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'll talk to you again soon, hopefully.
Yes, indeed. Looking forward to it. Time for us to go, but be sure to check out iSpyRadio.com for today's show page. There will be links to Trump's speech outlining massive voter fraud. It's important to share these things because the media is refusing to cover it. They do not want people to hear such things. Why? Because they know, if people know what you now know after today's show, that people just might do something. Laws are only valid if they are enforced, and that includes voting laws. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.